One of the great economists today, our friend John Lott, and it's Friday, and I wanted to reveal to you a brand new book, brand new, hot off the presses, that he's authored. It's very significant. It's called At the Brink, Will Obama Push Us Over the Edge? This isn't a big essay, you know, this isn't just a big opinion piece. This is your typical John Lott, which is loaded with fascinating information and substance. John Lott, how are you, my friend?
Oh, doing great. Thanks for having me on.
It's my pleasure. I want to go through certain aspects of this in the 9 or 10 minutes that we have, John, because you cover an enormous amount of information, and it's crucial information. And you're laying out Obama's record pretty heavy here. The book, as I say, is At the Brink. You say, let's go right to the stimulus part, you know, even though chapter one is the Obamacare disaster. Well, you know, all right, let's hit the Obamacare disaster. What are you trying to say there?
Well, I'm saying that he's done permanent damage already to what's been the best health care system in the world. If you got sick any place in the world, I think any objective comparison would say you'd want to be sick in the United States in the past. But you look at everything from the cut in research staffs for pharmaceutical companies to the 14% increase that we've had in health insurance premiums over the last 12 months. I mean, that's just the warm-up for what's going to be happening this coming January when the rest of the things go into place. And what we're going to see is, I think, fairly quickly, the destruction of private health insurance in this country with the rules that they have regarding pre-existing conditions. It's going to be like you can go and wait until you after you have a traffic accident before you buy car insurance. And then as soon as you get your car fixed, then you drop it. What would happen to car insurance in that case? It would essentially be the price of fixing the car. It would end. There would be no such thing as insurance, and that's pretty much what we're going to be going to, because there's large financial incentives in the way that Obamacare is set up for people to only get insurance when they're sick. And there may be many people out there who think that, you know, the right thing to do is to have insurance all the time. They're going to feel like they're behaving improperly just to go and wait to do it. But there's, over time, more and more people are going to see the large financial gains to only getting insurance when they get sick. And the people who continue to do the right thing, so to speak, are going to feel like they've been being gypped and the system will eventually collapse.
So people will pay this fairly modest penalty.
Right.
Then when they need the care, they'll suddenly purchase it.
That's right.
And after they get the care, they'll get off of it, and then they pay the modest penalty after that.
That's right. And it's not even clear you really have to pay this penalty, because it's amazing when you read these rules, but the IRS is set up so that they can't use their normal enforcement mechanisms to make people pay this penalty for not having insurance. You can't attach people's income or go after their bank accounts or do anything like that. The only thing that they can do is if you overpay your taxes, then they can deduct that from the rebate that they give you. But if you just reduce the amount that you pay in taxes so you're not supposed to get a rebate, there's really nothing that they can do to make you pay any penalty.
Yeah, I mean, that's an impossible economic model. And so what happens when the private health care system collapses? Then the government will have to step in even further and set up a one-size-fits-all, top-down health care system, won't they?
No, that's exactly right. I mean, that's obviously what many were trying to push for to begin with, including the president. And it looks as if they've set up this system to accomplish what they said they wanted, even though they didn't explicitly get it in the original bill.
You point out that stimulus and more stimulus results in fewer jobs and lower wages, and this has been the Obama approach. What do you mean by that?
Well, I think the stimulus has created unemployment. Just, there are many reasons, but just a simple reason that you have, and that is we had 5 different jobs programs, the stimulus and 4 other jobs programs during the first 2 years of the Obama administration, moving around $1.2 trillion. When the government moves $1.2 trillion, which is a huge amount of money, from where you and I would have spent it to where the government thinks it should be spent, you're not only moving the money there between different sets of companies, but you're moving the jobs that would have been associated with that. And the problem is that people don't instantly move from one set of jobs to another. They may not be qualified for the new jobs. They may have to get training. It takes a while to find where the new jobs are. They may be in a different part of the country. And that chaos that you have with moving around those resources and those jobs not only temporarily increases unemployment, but it reduces output. But it's also moving into less efficient production. You know, and something you've talked about many times on your show, the waste that's involved in things like these green energy, how there's a reason why nobody would go and spend their own money on these things without these big subsidies, because the costs are much greater than the benefits. And the thing is, you just don't have to look at the United States. Countries around the world that have followed this type of economic policy over the last 4 or 5 years, where they've increased spending in order to, quote, stimulate the economy, increase deficits, those are the countries that have done by far the worst. They're the ones that have had the slowest economic growth and the biggest drops in employment. You know, the countries that have done well are the ones that Obama stigmatizes by saying austerity. You know, the ones that have been financially responsible haven't had the government going and mucking things around by creating all sorts of chaos in the economy. They're the ones that have produced the most jobs. And it's this debt that we're left with, which is about $200,000 per family of four for publicly held debt now in this country, you know, that's a huge amount. What that means is higher future taxes. When somebody's trying to decide, do they go and invest in the United States or someplace else, not only do they have to contend with the fact that we already have by far the highest corporate income tax rates in the country, in the world, but they have to go and think about what's going to happen to their investments if taxes increase in the future to try to pay off these debts. And the United States is just simply not an attractive place to go and invest by any means. And, of course, on top of that, you have this massive regulatory avalanche that's come down. I try to go through and show those things in the book. And that's just another tax. It's just another cost of doing business. One example, if you look at Canada, if a company earns a dollar in Canada, they get to keep 15 cents more of every dollar that they earn than if they made an additional dollar in the United States. In Europe, amazingly, it's even worse. They get to keep about 19 more cents on average for every dollar they make in Europe than they make in the United States. And that's a huge difference. When you're talking about international capital markets of hundreds of trillions of dollars, which are trying to find even small differences in rates of return, you know, money flows away from us and into companies in other countries, and their workers become more productive and their wages go up.
You also point out that Obama has an affirmative war on enterprise in this country, on businesses in this country, right?
Well, sure, it's not just the rhetoric that he has, but all these policies that he's put in place. He thinks he knows better how to manage these companies, how to micromanage these companies, where to invest. When he even talks about, quote, the good things that he does for the companies, like these tax cuts, it's not the right type of tax cuts. What it is he'll have, if you look at the small business stimulus package that he had during the first 2 years, he had like 2,500 pages of kind of line items where it would say, if you're this particular company producing this product, you get a subsidy. If you're this one, then we'll give you some tax credit. You know, saying what types of products he likes and what he doesn't. It must have been a field day for some type of lobbyist to go through and to get their particular product listed, and somebody else got left out because they weren't producing the right size product, or they just didn't have the right political connections that are there. But, you know, these guys have no clue. You look at a lot of these things and you probably figure they put them together in an hour or so, whereas these individuals who are out there in the real world having to produce things have probably spent decades trying to figure out why they do things the way they do. And they
let's move in. You've got so much in this book that is so fascinating and bracing. Let's get to your roundhouse area here in part, which is gun control, the UN Arms Control Treaty. Will you explain to everybody what that is?
Well, it's this notion that somehow you can keep rebel groups or others that may be engaged in armed conflicts around the world from getting guns by regulating private ownership of guns. I don't think our Senate's ever going to approve it. But there are lots of countries around the world, in Canada, for example, the next time the Liberals get in power, or other countries like that.
But what would this treaty do to us here in this country and our right to bear arms?
Well, I think indirectly. I mean, we're not going to have the licensing or the tracking and other things that they're going to have, but to the extent it reduces gun ownership in many other countries around the world, I think indirectly it will impact our gun ownership rights in the United States, because it's going to make it so the rest of the world's going to be even more hostile to gun ownership in the future than they are now.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's it? What? Yeah, go ahead.
One thing I'd just like to bring up about guns, because I think it's going to be a long-term legacy of the Obama administration. I was just in Colorado a week ago, because they were just passing some gun control laws, and at the invitation of several legislators there. And it was amazing, because I've never heard this happening before, but the Obama White House was calling up state House members and essentially twisting their arms to go and vote for state legislation on gun control. They were going there and saying, if you don't vote for us, we're going to go and recruit state House race candidates to run against you. But if you do vote for us, then we'll go and have the president help campaign for you next year when you go and run for office. I mean, have you ever heard of something like that? But it
no.
It just goes to how strongly Obama and this administration feel about trying to change our country in terms of gun control. The argument that the vice president made, apparently, when he called up these state legislatures and he got seven of them to switch, which was enough to get the four bills passed that they had up, was that they want them passed in a relatively pro-gun state like Colorado, because that would then help them push forward on the national level, because they can say, look, even in states like Colorado, there's strong support for these different types of gun control laws.
These folks really are diabolical, aren't they?
Well, they've really thought these things out, and it's going to have a long-term impact on this country. And you look at the types of laws that they were trying to push in Colorado. They want to have a fee.
I've got 30 seconds.
Fee for people buying guns. And there was an amendment to try to make it so poor people didn't have to pay the fee. The Democrats, of all people, wanted poor people to pay these fees. And it's obvious the only reason they want to is they want to reduce gun ownership.
But, all right, my friend. John Lott. The book is At the Brink. This is an incredible book, ladies and gentlemen. You can get it on Amazon.com, any major books there. John, I want to thank you for all your patriotism these past several years and many, many years, and we'll be calling on you again. God bless you, my friend.
Oh, same to you. Thank you very much.
The book is At the Brink by John Lott. You got to get this book. There aren't a lot of great books out right now. This is one of them, The Brink by